Fear the Walking Dead Season 2 Episode 10 is over, but we're just getting started here on the Fear the Walking Dead recap here on Post Show Recaps. And now, here they are, the Brandon, Derek, and Baby James of podcasting. I'm Rob Cicerina. Here's Josh Wigler and Alex Kidwell. Guys, how are you?
Oh, baby. Oh, my God. Pass the beans.
Yes.
Maybe a little chicken.
Who's Baby James? Who's Baby James?
I'll volunteer to be Baby James. You can call me Baby Wigs, and I'll be very happy.
I was going
to
say I'm the new guy on the block, so I'd take it too, but, you know.
Yeah. Okay. Wow.
Whichever one of us it is has to volunteer to get shot in the leg, though. So keep that in mind.
Oh, my.
I feel like of the three of us, I'm the likeliest to get shot in the zombie apocalypse. I'm a big target as compared to you, slighter gentlemen. I'm prone to get myself into stupid situations like that. I feel like I would be first in line. So I'll take it here on the podcast.
Yeah, well, I don't know, though. I feel like all three of us are kind of craven. I think we'd all give up the chicken pretty quick.
Damn. Yeah. So it was a week where we finally got to catch up with Chris and Travis here in the back half of season two. And we got to see more of Alicia as she wandered through the hotel, meeting up with the Keymaster, Josh.
Yes. Are you the gatekeeper, Rob?
Yes. Yes. And then
Vince Clortho,
of course,
over here. You're the Vince Clortho of podcasting.
Yeah, and then we didn't get to see what happened with Maddie and Strand. It looks like that's going to have to wait for a flash forward or flashback next week.
Do you like how they just yada yada through everything that happened with Madison and Strand? They're just okay? All of the suspense is taken out now?
No, I don't like that. I don't like that. And it looks like even worse is that next week we're going to get the flashback to them getting out. I mean, talk about there's no suspense because of the plot armor. Now it's like we have a flash forward to they're okay. And then now next week we have to wait and watch how they got out of this when we know that they're going to get out okay.
Well, we talked about it last week, Rob. I mean, we knew they were getting out. We knew. So really this is just, you know, your gratuitous zombie head smashing fix for next week. This is what this is going to be at this point.
Yeah, so I thought they were going to really just say, okay, well, how do you put them in a cliffhanger and then don't show us how they get out of it? But now they're just going to say, yeah, they're okay. And now next week, let's go back and watch the tape of how they got out of this mess.
That sounds compelling to me. I mean, they were drunk. They were very, very drunk the last time we saw them. So how did they get out of that? I'm kind of compelled by that. I really do kind of want to see how the hell did they get them out of this.
I do want to see least one or two swings at a zombie that just miss outright. Because, you know, if you're that wasted, like, you should be seeing a couple of those things coming at you.
You'd think
We'll see all that next week when we recap episode 4 of the back half of season 2, but that's not what we're going to get into today. But Josh, I loved how you mentioned, did we yada yada all of the Strand and Maddie stuff, because we had the appearance of another Seinfeld actress in Brenda Strong, a.k.a. Sue Ellen Mischke, plays the mom from The Wedding Party, Mrs. Stowe.
Wow, how about that? I only knew her as the Ice Queen from The 100. Alex, did you know
yes.
that?
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a shout out to AJ Mass who called that out on Twitter.
Yes. She also is the disembodied narrator on Desperate Housewives, but I'm especially excited that the post-show recap synergy is strong because Kiva Wienicker and I just recapped her first appearance on Seinfeld on the most current edition of the Seinfeld Recap podcast here on Post-Show Recap. So the brand synergy is working here on Post-Show Recap.
How about that?
Can you give the catch-up of who Sue Ellen is for people who are not as up to date on the Seinfeld podcast?
Sue Ellen Mischke, aka the braless wonder, that she is Elaine's arch nemesis, compared by Jerry as the Lex Luthor of Elaine's life. She does not wear a bra ever, and Elaine gives her a bra as a birthday present, and she wears it as a top, spoiler alert, in the most recent episode of Seinfeld that we talked about. She's also the heiress to the O. Henry candy bar fortune. She, I think, makes three total appearances. Also, she is the woman who is getting married in India in the Backwards episode of Seinfeld.
And also
another destination wedding.
And as we learn here, not a huge fan of seeing her daughter's face getting bitten off by her husband.
Yeah, well, let's jump into that in terms of we had this flashback to the wedding at the beginning of the episode. I thought that this broke all sorts of Walking Dead convention canon in terms of how somebody turns into a walker. I mean, we've never seen anything like this before. We have a person who's fine, who's not even sick, has a sudden heart attack, and in 10 seconds becomes a walker. Alex,
in fairness, I kept track of this. It was 40 seconds, Rob.
Okay, 40 seconds. I mean, Alex, we've never seen anything like this. I mean, even go back to, a similar time frame to, The Walking Dead season one, where we got to see Andrea's sister turn. I mean, that always in The Walking Dead, if not days, certainly hours before somebody turns. We've never had anybody, I guess maybe Shane. Did this happen with Shane, Josh?
Shane came back pretty fast.
Pretty quick.
Shane is probably the fastest to come back. But I mean, the way that he died felt a lot more immediate than the way that this man would have died. I mean, Shane was stabbed in the heart. He bleeds out. He's dead in a few seconds, basically. So he has some time to be dead. And who knows how much time it takes for Carl to track down Rick and then everything that happens with zombie Shane to ensue. This man in Fear the Walking Dead drops dead on the dance floor, pulls a big Tom Callahan, and then within 40 seconds, he's back up as a zombie. That we have never seen anything happen quite that fast.
I guess if you're looking to defend this, I would say, it's possible we yada-yada'd a little bit through the resuscitation process. In theory, I guess it's also possible that,
there was no yada. There was no yada. She does mouth to mouth, and while she's doing mouth to mouth, he becomes a walker.
They just kind of
how long?
Who knows? I don't know. We don't know. That's a storytelling device.
I mean, I'm pretty sure we saw this in real time. I think
it felt like real time.
But I'm saying if you're trying to give him a benefit of the doubt here, I think that's the direction.
There was no bit of dialogue that was like, do you think you should keep giving him mouth to mouth? It's been about like 4 or 5 hours since he died on the floor.
Are his lips getting cold yet? Right.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to do anything.
I felt bad for Jessica. She's the bride. Her father is having this problem right in front of her, and she's the one who has to do mouth-to-mouth.
Right. Somebody tap in.
There was no one else they could have called for the rescue breathing?
Yeah, so that's the cold open to this, and we got to see sort of like the flashback to the whole wedding setup, and we got to see last week where we had the whole wedding cake, and you would think that maybe that the survivors, like, it's amazing that wedding cake never got knocked over, Josh, after the entire wedding party got locked in there and then all turned to walkers while that was all going on.
You would think that that cake would have been, if not devoured by the walkers, then they would at least have walked through it and would be wearing the cake. That is something, like, you would think that you'd be seeing some cake walkers around the hotel.
Yeah, a cake walk for all of the
walkers.
Walk,
yes.
In this episode. Were you buying the timeline of events? I mean, we saw how things ended up going down in the first season of Fear the Walking Dead, where things are starting to go south, metaphorically, not literally, as opposed to the people in the wedding party who went south of the border for this destination wedding. Did you feel like that they would have still gone through with this destination wedding at the point where things were starting to really go downhill?
Yeah, especially because you get the sense from Sue Ellen and her husband that they are connected enough to get some like advance notice on what's going on with the viral outbreak, with the zombie outbreak. She says to Elena, the hotel manager, "We've been hearing things. It's
the
getting
night
worse.
Manager.
We hear the night manager, Mr. Manager, Miss Manager." She says that there's they're going to shut down the border. We don't want to be here. It seems like they're getting some inside track. So for a pair of people that are getting some inside track to go through with this wedding at this point in time maybe was a foolish decision, ultimately. Not a great choice for these
people. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it was one of those, extended, week-long weddings with the wedding at the end to cap it off or something. But, yeah, it's not a – As you know, she claims to know people. If you know people, you'd think this wouldn't be your go-to move here.
So I thought that this was just sort of backstory for setting up this Elena character, but this really is like the beginning of this whole storyline that's going on here, where now the surviving Sue Ellen Mishki, Mrs. Stowe, is now engulfed in some sort of a battle between the hotel manager. So now there's like the disgruntled mother of the bride who's mad at the hotel manager, and it seems like this is going to be a multi-week conflict that's going on here at the hotel.
Yeah, where the now, new Alexandria versus the Saviors.
Yeah, I mean, Josh, that we're supposed to believe that after the wedding, then there's this whole battle between the hotel staff and the disgruntled wedding guests?
Well, it seems like Elena hasn't left the tower since all of this happened. That's what she says to Alicia. So I think that it's been kind of a passive battle at best. I mean, Hector goes searching for food. Hector gets abducted by Sue Ellen and her posse. I don't know that they were hunting down Hector and Elena this whole time, but these two different factions that were clearly, you know, with some, you know, a history of violence between the two of them are cohabitating the hotel at the same time. But I am worried. I do think that this is probably going to continue to play out. I mean, Sue Ellen and her entire group, they seem to still be intact as we saw them at the end of this episode. Alicia and Elena and Hector have reunited with Madison and Strand. So you do wonder, is there going to be like this mini war between these two sides at the hotel? Is that going to be the Madison storyline for this half of season two?
I definitely get the impression that Elena, you know, pretty quickly, I think, you know, she locked the door. And then, you know, she says she had to think about the other guests, but that room she was in, really well stocked. I think the move at that point was probably to secure all supplies in one location and, yeah, secure herself and her nephew somewhere, like, on their own floor and just kind of watch it all fall apart.
Yeah. Joshua, why were the hotel keys such an important, like, wouldn't just any closed door suffice? Have the walkers developed some sort of velociraptor type capabilities where they can turn a doorknob?
Yeah, and I don't know if there are any computer hackers on Sue Ellen's team that would be able to improbably lock the doors from the Raptors. I think that having the keys, barring having a computer hacker, is probably your best way into some of the locked spots throughout the hotel. Maybe they can get access to some of the sweet foods, the sweet treats that are being hidden away from the guests. So this might be a big thing for them. They might be able to really own the hotel and set up shop here. I mean, who knows? Like, where are they going? Are they going to try and go north of the border at this point? They've been holed up in the hotel this whole time. So now that they have the keys, maybe now they can have access to some of the better parts of the hotel and they can improve their lives a little bit. Also, they banished Elena from the hotel, so they must be very happy with that as well.
Yeah. Hold on to your butts.
Hold on to your butts.
And what's the significance of the do not disturb signs, Alex? That the episode is named Do Not Disturb. I mean, that is, did Elena put walkers into rooms, or she's just gone through and she knows all the rooms that have a walker in them and then put do not disturb signs on all those doors?
From what she was saying to Alicia, I got the impression that her and Hector were doing a little bit of kind of tandem work to secure them all on one floor. And so that's why it seemed like Alicia was on that one floor where every door almost had a do not disturb sign and something, you know, making noise from inside it. I think that was Elena's ongoing work of trying to secure everything, you know, somewhere where they won't get at her and Hector.
But Josh, did we yada yada something else? Because last week she was on a floor that did not have any walkers on it. She seemed like she was holed up in a room. She couldn't find Ophelia. And then she comes out of the hotel room that she's in, and now walkers are everywhere.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we saw the walkers are, you know, they're all hopping off of the balconies, and that's when Alicia sees that, and everything has sort of gone haywire from there. She doesn't know where Ophelia is, and all of the walkers are now suddenly out and about and flooding around. I'm not sure what it was that got them onto the floor, unless that was Elena doing her thing where she was trying to protect herself from the walkers. She moved the walkers to the floor where she knew humans were. I'm not really sure how all of that played out, to be honest with you.
It also seems like that now there are like flashing emergency lights going on everywhere in the hotel. It really seems like the hotel has undergone some sort of a state change from when they first arrived at the hotel, Alex. Is that just in my imagination?
I think so.
Like flashing strobe lights in the hallway and stuff like that. Like, I don't remember any of that stuff going on last week.
You know, maybe with all this Walker activity, maybe the fluorescence got knocked ajar.
I guess so.
I think the thing is that Madison and Strand, they've gotten so drunk, they thought that they were in a hotel, but the twist is that they are actually secretly in a prison facility.
Oh, no. There's a lot of that going on.
Just when you think you're out, they drag you back in.
They pull you back in. Josh, did you feel like you were into the Alicia Die Hard inspired elevator sequence?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked. Listen, I'm gonna compliment the show a little bit here. I think that Alicia Debnam Carey is a badass. I mean, she was, you know, once again to drop the 100. She's fantastic on the 100 as Commander Lexa on the Hunge. She's a terrific character there. She's been underutilized on Fear of the Walking Dead, as far as I've been concerned. Mm-hmm. You know, they kind of really make Alicia sort of this person who doesn't really know what she's doing. She starts flirting with the guy on the radio, and that causes all sorts of drama for everybody on the Abigail. But on her other show, she has proven that she is such a badass. She's capable of awesome action scenes. She's a really great actor. So I really liked seeing her get a chance to sort of have her action hero moment here on Fear the Walking Dead. I thought she was badass. I thought she was cool. I think that that is a step in the right direction for that character. Not going to heap tons of praise on some of the other aspects of the show, but I really liked that. I liked watching her race to the elevator, climbing up the elevator cable, trying to talk some sense into Elena, trying to be sort of like a pillar of strength. I thought they did a good job with the character in this episode.
Yeah, really channeling her inner Laura Croft this time around.
Yes.
Yeah. And so, Josh, when they have Alicia and Elena meet up and Elena is explaining everything that's gone on, Alicia is saying to her, like, don't worry about it. You know, we've done worse things than what you did. What is Alicia referring to when she says that we've done worse things than lock 150 hotel guests in a room so that they could all become walkers?
I was thinking about that because what Elena did does seem pretty dicey. You know, yeah. She really did condemn this whole wedding party to death. I understand that she's trying to lock things down to keep the rest of her guests at her hotel safe, but she's definitely responsible for the deaths of the vast majority of the people in that room. She locked them in there. So that's pretty bad. What has Alicia done that's worse than that? What have the Clarks, the Manawas done? Probably Chris has done some really bad stuff at this point, but as a group, maybe the worst thing, and this was actually pretty terrible, didn't they like Pied Piper a bunch of walkers to a military compound and let all of those walkers run rampant all over the military compound? Aren't all of those deaths on their hands?
That was pretty bad. I mean, I think that they also probably feel responsible for the whole Cecilia situation.
Celia.
I don't know why Alicia would feel that bad about it, though. She didn't do anything wrong.
But then again, you know, this is, you know, Rob, I think this is Survivor 101, you know, right? Tell the person what they need to hear in the moment. And even if it's not necessarily true, it does make Elena feel better.
Yeah. Josh, what did you think of the moment where we ended up seeing Alicia go and lure all the walkers into one room and then climb out onto the balcony and then climb across to the next room?
I mean, she's waiting for the sheet to get thrown her way and the glass is cracking. And I'm looking at the climb that she's going to have to do. And I'm wondering, like, I feel like push comes to shove. You don't need to wait for the sheet. Like, if that glass is cracking and it looks like the walkers are about to come through, maybe you just want to start, you know, hopping over. You might want to start moving a little bit faster. It was tense. I didn't think anything bad was going to happen to her. It felt like, you know, a high adrenaline scene, but with no real stakes of losing Alicia there. That's not how you're going to lose that character. So it was fine.
I do feel like that The Walking Dead is very inconsistent on the strength of walkers, where how many walkers need to be pushing into a sliding glass door for the glass to shatter, where we've seen other times where walkers just turn to mush when they're up against a chain link fence. And it just seems that to me that I wasn't buying that the walkers could just crack a sliding glass door.
Still new in the zombie apocalypse. That chain link fence walker, it had been out in the right Georgia sun for a couple of years at that point. I think it was getting kind of
like unless they were getting like running starts and like a battering ram, eventually maybe they could do it. But just like pushing into it at 0 miles an hour.
These were strong walkers, you know. They had cake in their bellies, they had wedding food in their bellies, so like they actually had some heft to them.
There's a lot of momentum coming from behind. They had like a serious conga line going.
Indeed. Yeah,
hot. So that's what was going on. So the wedding music was still infused in their bones.
Fear the congoing dead.
Is there anything else from Alicia and Elena at the hotel, or do you want to talk about the other half of this episode?
I liked the cold open until the guy died and became a walker in 40 seconds. I thought that was a good scene right up until that moment, which was just a little bit too unbelievable for me. I am, you know, I'm not sure if I'm psyched about the prospect of Sue Ellen versus Elena. Sue Elena
No.
being like the big conflict of this storyline here for the back half of season two. But I do think maybe it's worth, you know, as Antonio Mazzara would say, planting the flag on the Sue Ellen character, that she's the person who said to Elena in that flashback, you know, we've got some inside track on how things are going. So maybe she knows a little something more than the other characters do. Maybe that information might become important in the future episode. So she's a character that I think is worth watching in terms of having some potential power to play in the episodes to come. Played by Brenda Strong, who's a great actor, so could be a cool character to have on the show.
Yeah, that's a good call. I think I kind of like seeing this dynamic. It's a little different from something we've seen on The Walking Dead before, really, where it's just kind of like a Wizard of Oz situation. You know, one person kind of locked up in an ivory tower, lording it over everyone else. Like, nobody sees Elena, not how. And yeah.
And if you splash her with water, she melts.
So in terms of Ophelia, you thought maybe, all right, did Sue Ellen Mishki, did she capture her? Doesn't seem like it. Doesn't seem like she met up with Maddie and Strand. So where the hell is Ophelia? Should she just be presumed dead, Josh?
No, I'm sure we'll see some sort of follow-up on Ophelia. I mean, she might be dead before long. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't take, you know, an episode or two for her to not make it out of here. But I don't think we won't see any sign of her again. I feel like for her to just kind of fade away. I mean, I guess she could just fade away, and would anyone really be like, where's Ophelia?
No.
I think that she could probably just fade away, but I bet that we see her again.
Alex, over under 2.5 episodes until we get the Ophelia standalone flashback episode.
90 minute
flashback standalone Ophelia episode.
The proverbial Ophelia learning Aikido. Ophelia the cheesemaker. Yeah.
Yes.
I'm gonna take. Yeah, I think 2 is about right. I'm gonna take the. I'll go 2 exactly.
Yeah, I think that's probably the right call. And it's not just what she's doing now. It's also flashbacks to what she was doing before the zombie apocalypse happened. So it's like double flashback Ophelia episode.
That's really good.
Let's go back to Chris and Travis, and we hadn't seen them at all yet. So here they are. Boy, this decision, that I bet Travis really rues the day that he decided to not take a pair of slippers when he went out to go chase Chris.
Yeah, that seems to have been a bad choice. He is not very happy in terms of the foot department. He rolled an ankle or something or other, but he is just hobbling along. Not a great look for Travis.
Yeah, overall, Jess, really terrible. And
some terrible choices have been made by Travis.
His feet are so bad that he can't even drive the car, Alex. It's almost that even like the stepping on the gas pedal is too painful for Travis.
Yeah, it's a tough life. You know, society's crumbled. You're separated from, you know, the woman you love. And now you got bleedy feet, Rob. What? We can't catch a break.
Bleedy feet and a crazy kid.
Who has the worst feet on Sunday night television? Is it Travis on Fear of the Walking Dead, or was it John Turturro on The Night Of?
Good question. It's a good question.
No one knows the answer.
We don't know the answer. But in terms of Chris and Travis, like Travis feeling, okay, well, maybe let me get Chris back on the right track. We'll have some father-son bonding time. I'll teach him how to drive a car. And they come across like a convenience store, and then they go inside to go and find some stuff. And Chris ends up just running into a bunch of walkers and some punks, and he ends up walking off with a big can of beans. But he makes a good impression on these three punk guys who you know are going to show back up. Really, there's only two types of people that you meet on Fear the Walking Dead. Either a bunch of like Mexican hooligans or some sort of like central casting, like a millennial teen, like a pretty boy white guys.
Didn't you think that that Brendan, Derek, and Baby James, they both, their names and their looks, it sounds like they should be in a boy band.
Yes.
Like they feel like they, like maybe that's the secret that they're withholding from Travis and Chris right now. It's like, we were here in Mexico on a tour. You don't recognize us?
I'm Brendan. I'm the leader. That's Baby James. He's the cool, quiet one.
Exactly.
Yeah. Three real douche bros, but boy,
that's
these
the name
guys,
of the band. There you go. The douche three bros. Real douche bros, yes.
The three like real douche bros. Yeah. They really make a strong impression on Killer Chris.
Yeah, and they want Killer Chris to be the fourth douche bro. They want him in the band.
Yeah, well, because Chris ends up running off with a big can of their beans, and they're not too happy about it. Josh, what's the better father-son bonding canned good on The Walking Dead? Is it the giant can of beans or the giant can of pudding that Carl found back?
Yes. I'm so glad that you brought it up, because I would have brought it up if you had not. I mean, I guess the beans have to win, right? Because Carl was a jerk and he didn't share any with his father. He just ate it all on his own. So as much as we want to, you know, feel negative towards Killer Chris these days, at least he's sharing the beans.
Yeah, the bonding item over there was Cheese Whiz, as I recall.
Yeah. But I'll never forget that visual of Carl eating 10 pounds of pudding on the roof with a spoon.
Well, if you see an episode with Killer Chris like sitting on the edge of the world eating an entire can of beans to himself, then I think we could very safely say that he is the worst character in the Walking Dead universe.
By the way, yeah. I don't know if you guys noticed this, but it was pointed out when I went on the Fear the Walking Dead Reddit this morning. People have been talking about this. At the very beginning, Travis takes Chris's crowbar, breaks open the window, and then just grabs the door handle.
Yeah, he can't unlock the handle to the door, and he takes the crowbar and then he tries it again.
Yeah, like just breaking the glass instantly unlocks the car.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good move. I didn't know that.
It's a great catch. I did not notice that.
Yeah. It is a good move. Okay, so then when the three douche bros come back, you know, Travis is trying to make peace with them, and then they end up sort of hanging out. And it's not really clear what their intention is when they come and go and find this campfire, but they end up really making this great impression on Chris, and they basically want him to be the fourth douche bro.
Yeah, they want Chris to be the fourth douche bro, and Travis is really wary of his son going off to join this boy band. He doesn't like it. He senses danger with these kids. He sees that they're trouble.
He's running with the wrong crowd.
But this is the right crowd for Chris. This is Killer Chris's crew. This is what he's been after. He wants like-minded people. He wants people who are going to kill, who are going to steal, who are going to survive in the apocalypse. And Travis is really out on that. So Travis and Chris really not seeing eye to eye right now.
And we're seeing the age-old debate on The Walking Dead rear itself again, which is, you know, is it valuable to have numbers versus are your numbers stupid? At what point is it good to have numbers when the people around you are making bad decisions?
Yeah,
I feel like you don't want to trust the group that one of its core members' name is Baby James. Like, I feel like there's no good connotations with that. Maybe he's like a sweet guy and you're calling him Baby James because he's an innocent little guy, but based on his story about what was her name, Betsy, like Betsy McGillicutty, like I don't know what's going on with Baby James.
Yeah, they tried to give you a red flag.
Yeah, they tried. I like the
big
scene.
Betsy D'Angelo is what they called her.
Yikes.
So I like the scene where they're all driving and Chris is in the front seat and two of the douche bros are talking about like some girl that one of the guys allegedly did or did not hook up with. And
yeah,
then
Betsy.
Yeah. And then there was in the back seat or the back of the pickup where you had Travis talking to the third douche bro. And he's like, so you having a good time? And Travis is like, no, I am not. I'm not having a good time. This is not fun. I'm not enjoying your company. which really, you know, I feel like that it's a real battle of the millennials and the Gen Xers with Travis along for the ride with the douche bros.
Yeah, I don't think that Travis is really enjoying being stuck in a pickup truck filled with John Ralphios. I don't think that that is his ideal post-apocalyptic scenario.
Yeah. Although, you know, these guys' philosophy about how, like, you know, we're the gods of the new world did remind me of, like, that claimed group. From, you know, that was kind of their philosophy, too, is that this world is made for us and that this is a good thing. So right. We have seen this kind of thing before. And who knows? Maybe these guys are the origin point for the claimed guys.
Yeah.
Well, if that's where we're going, I like the idea of that because that ended with Rick biting out Joe the Claimer's throat. And maybe this will end with Travis biting out Brandon the douche bro's throat.
Yeah. Josh, it reminds me a little bit of like when Pinocchio goes off with all of the other like bad kids. What is that? Pleasure Island, the place where they are all allowed to go, but then they all like turn into donkeys. Like they're allowed to like sort of like do whatever they want and be really bad there.
I never noticed that was such a metaphor for like joining a gang.
Yeah, yeah.
Stay off the streets, Pinocchio.
So are you saying that the longer that Chris spends time with these lying guys, his nose is just going to grow and grow and grow, and the more he lies and kills and kills?
Yeah, that, you know, I guess Travis is like the Geppetto in this scenario, and Chris is sort of like Pinocchio, wants to go out and find himself and find these guys where he can really just do whatever he wants and be a bro, but it's not without consequence.
Yeah, screw you,
Chris.
Dad. I'm a real boy.
Yeah, yeah, except it feels like if Travis is Geppetto and Chris is Pinocchio, doesn't it feel like either Geppetto or Pinocchio is about to kill the other one? Doesn't it feel like that's what we're building up towards right now, based on the way this episode ends with Chris shooting the guy and Travis being horrified? And that has to be a pretty declarative statement for Travis. Yeah, my son is gone. This is not a good situation. Doesn't it feel like we're getting shades of Rick versus Shane from season 2 of Walking Dead, and we're building to some sort of collision course with these two characters, and only one of them is going to walk away?
Boy, I don't know if I took it to that conclusion point. I definitely, you know, I was thinking Travis was thinking should have stuck with Madison at that point for sure.
Mm-hmm. No, but she doesn't look at him like he's one of them. He's too different. He doesn't fit in.
Yeah, but Travis, I think, you know, he should have at this point, now that he sees that maybe Madison had a point about Chris, maybe he should have just cut his losses there.
Yeah, Kill the Chris doesn't want to go back to
Stick
Madison
with the same
and everybody
people.
Else. Yeah.
Do you like the name Killer Chris?
I do. I love it. It's catchy, and
it's
I
great.
Think from here on out he will be Killer Chris. Especially considering that Killer Chris does live up to his namesake. I know on the Survivor podcast, Josh, we've talked a lot about people who end up in a tribe like, oh, you're the Brains tribe or you're the Blue Collar tribe. And once you get that moniker, what's in it for moniker, then
right.
What's best for moniker, then you end up really sort of living up to your name. At the point where they dub him Killer Chris, is the die cast, Josh, that he is going to just murder some guy in cold blood who's trying to just protect his chickens, damn?
Yeah, I think at this point, I mean, he was already leaning in that direction. He was really proud to tell the guys that he's killed 17 walkers. They're calling him Killer Chris. He's already been very troubled and leaning in that direction to begin with. So I think now that he has the name Killer Chris, he also must think that's a pretty badass nickname. So yeah, I think that Killer Chris is fully going over to the dark side and embracing those Killer Chris urges.
Kylo Chris? Yeah.
Kylo Chris.
And that little boy grew up to be the Negan of Mexico.
The Negan of Mexico. Yeah. But Josh, in terms of what you're talking about, like you feel like Chris is going to kill Travis?
I don't know. I mean, I'm
Travis
not sure
can't kill Chris.
You know, I'm not sure. I think that there's a direction that this seems to be building in towards for me. Like, Travis can reunite with Madison. Travis and Chris can't reunite with Madison mm-hmm. with the group. I think that we're past that point. Chris doesn't want to go back. What, you know, scenario plays out where Chris is actively, voluntarily going back to Madison? And if he's not voluntarily going back to Madison, what situation is Travis going to get in where he is able to forcibly drag that kid along? He's not dragging Killer Chris anywhere. Killer Chris is unchained. He's on his own at this point. So I feel like the next natural resolution to this story, I feel like, unless Travis just decides to let Killer Chris go be Killer Chris and he just lets go of his son, which is another possible outcome, I feel like only one of these guys can walk away. I could see Killer Chris killing Travis if his douche bro friends say that that's the thing they need to do in order to survive. Chris seems to be at a place where he's willing to do something like that. For Travis, it would be harder to see, but he's, you know, he's killed people before. It would be a big deal to kill his own son, but if it was like a kill or be killed situation or a mercy killing or something like that, I could see it happening. I don't know if it's one of them has to kill the other or one of them allows a situation to happen where the other one dies, but I'm feeling pretty sure that only one of Travis or Chris is going to survive season two.
I disagree.
There can only be one.
There's going to be one Manalo. I disagree. This is how I think it's going to resolve. And I think it's actually going to be the same exact thing on the Nick and Maddie front. I think that Chris is going to be like, screw you, Dad. Get out of here. Like, I'm the fourth douche bro now. You can't tell me what to do. And then he's going to end up in a situation where they're going to ask him to do something. Either maybe they might turn on him. They might do something that for some reason for Chris, it's like a bridge too far. And then Travis is going to come in, save the day, and rescue him, and then he will win Chris back to his side, and then they can go after. Now Travis has now proved how much he loves Chris, then it sort of like made everything fine with killing his mom, and then I think they can return to the group at large by season three.
That's a pretty emo route you just picked up.
It does not mean that it's not the accurate route.
Yeah, I know.
What about this? What about the Point Break route where, you know, maybe they get back, they, you know, Chris and these guys are stealing from someone and holding them at gunpoint, and Travis turns the corner and it's Madison and people, and now he's got to choose.
Interesting.
Yeah. Idea of Travis on the ground and like shooting the gun up in the air. No.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Travis
let's
has
plant
the gun
flags
and
on this.
He's pointing at Chris. Yeah, he's pointing at Madison and he's pointing at Chris and he's pointing at Madison.
Okay. Rob, let me say this, Rob. I hope that my version plays out because I think
that
would be good for the show. The version that you sketched out sounds a whole lot more like Fear the Walking Dead.
Yes. Yes. I think that's exactly what we're going to see.
Mine is like the optimistic viewpoint. Yours is like the normal, this is the show we've been watching, this is probably the show we will continue to watch.
Yours is bold. Yeah.
I'm hoping for an improvement. I think improvement on this show comes in the form of culling the cast. We have to trim some of the fat off of this cast for this show to really stand a chance. And I feel like building up a big confrontation with Chris and Travis would be a cool way to do that. But based on what we've seen on Fear the Walking Dead, not confident that'll play out. The version you sketched out sounds a lot more like
I mean, we're going to get Elena's going to die. Hector's going to die. Sure. Mrs. Stowe is going to die. Baby James is going to die. Like, we'll lose that. We'll introduce these new characters and then we'll lose all of them. But none of the core characters are dying.
Red shirt
is right.
Sounds right to me.
Josh, what did you think about Killer Chris in this episode? I thought he makes an odd fashion choice. He wraps his sweater around his waist like a Joey Lawrence circa 1992.
Whoa!
Yeah. I thought that was an odd look for the very menacing Killer Chris.
Yeah.
I got to be honest, the only fashion choice that I've noticed on Fear the Walking Dead season two is Nick abandoning the grandpa jacket. And I'm so happy with that I just like haven't even bothered paying attention to anybody. I guess I liked Alicia Denham Carey's denim shirt. I thought that was pretty cool.
Well, he's going for a very unique look, I think. He wants to be a killer, but he also wants to look like a guy who might enjoy the occasional wine tasting.
Yeah. As the new member in his J. Crew of guys, that's what he decided to do. And then, Alex, what about this big shootout that we got to at the end of the episode? I mean, how bad of a look is this for Chris, of the man who was just trying to defend his chickens? Did he need to kill that guy? Should they have just stood down? Did you think that they were in danger? Was it self-defense?
Yeah, no, definitely I don't think you needed to kill that guy. I mean, you get no indication that that guy's trying to do anything other than protect his stuff. And, you know, those three graves, all with, you know, girls' names on them or women's names on them, are all very fresh-looking, that dirt. So, you know, the guy's just, assumedly, just buried a wife and two daughters or something. And, you know, yeah, it's no, this is bad. Travis is right to try to, you know, not. But then again, Travis is like the one guy here who's, you know, putting moral obligations above, you know, hierarchy of needs. These kids are treating themselves as gods of the new age, and we can take what we want and do what we want, and the world is our oyster. So it's a fundamentally different way of looking at this world.
Josh, where do you think this goes in the short term? Because now it seems like, okay, now what do we do with this? We just killed this guy. One, do you think that we're going to see more of this story next week? And then two, whenever we see it, how do you think that Travis is going to handle this?
Yeah, I don't think that we're going to see it next week. But maybe we will. I think that we're going to see it soon. And I think, you know, I feel like it would fall apart pretty quickly. Like, I feel like Travis not thrilled with his son for killing a man, already not thrilled with this group, already concerned about his son before he became actually Killer Chris. I could see Travis trying to make a break for it with Killer Chris and it going very poorly. So I could see this really reaching a boiling point pretty soon, where it could end with, you know, Travis kicked to the side of the road and everybody else goes off with the car, and now Travis is on his own. But I feel like this is going to go very poorly. I think Travis's dissatisfaction with this group, which so far seems mostly undetected by the douche bros, I think that they feel that Travis isn't completely comfortable with this crew. I think that whatever thin veil exists between Travis and these, yeah, this wedding veil, I think that that's going to be lifted back, and there's going to be a big kiss of a reveal that Travis does not like these guys.
And then, Alex, what about stylistically? At the end of the episode, I thought it was a bit dizzying how fast we were cutting from one story to the other with the two climactic scenes that were happening. What did you think of that choice?
I guess it didn't bother me so much. I guess now that you mention it, it was kind of, you know, quick cut at times, but certainly relative to what we've come to expect from Fear the Walking Dead, I really like this episode. I mean, it definitely held my interest all the way through and gave us a little bit of kind of character development in terms of new people that were being introduced. I think they built people a little more than they've done in the past. So I was pretty happy with everything.
Josh, did you like how they did it in the final act?
Do I like how they did it in the final act is a great question out of context.
Mm. Yes.
In context, I did enjoy where the Travis and Chris story built to, just because I think that that could be an interesting thread, or at least a thread that could burn up pretty fast, and that would be great. So I like where they're going with that, and I hope that they're going in the direction that I pitched. Maybe they aren't, but for right now, I did like how that built up. With the Alicia and Elena thing, just getting to that reveal that Madison and Strand were fine, especially if we're going to go and check in on them next week and find out how they survived that situation, did feel like it's really sucking the drama out of that reveal for no reason. Like, you could leave Alicia and everybody in the corridor without Madison opening the door, and you're like, oh God, what's going to happen to them? You know, at least create a little bit of disbelief. Not that anyone, I think, would really think Alicia was going to be ultimately in danger there. But I didn't like that. I didn't like how it left off with the Alicia storyline. I did like how it left off with the Travis and Chris. I thought that that was a good move.
Yeah, such an amazing coincidence that the exact corridor that Alicia and Elena ended up getting backed into just happened to be barricaded on the other side, where Strand and Maddie happened to be hiding from the walker. So a very fortuitous break for them.
You know, it could have been not locked in the first place. So you win some, you lose some, Rob.
Yeah. And then what is Sue Ellen Mischke going to do with the keys now? Will she be locking them into different rooms? Are they locked in the hotel now and they can't leave?
I think the first move is to go to that room that had all the stockpiled drinks and food and everything and just start taking
the
that
last Heineken in the world.
Elena in mass, yeah. Elena had stockpile. I don't know if you noticed when she's talking to Alicia, but all I could eye is like all the steel and plastic wrapping, just crates of stuff she had up in that room.
Yeah. I thought it was pretty clear that now that she has the key, she's going to go to the top level of the hotel and unite with the gatekeeper, and they're going to bring Gozer into this world.
Do you think this is one of those hotels that's so big that it has like a water tower on the top in case of fires? And if so, could you just unleash like all those gallons of water and just flood the hotel out of zombies?
Hmm. I mean,
I don't know how
is
you,
that
you know,
I thought you were going to you just yourself. Drink the water and stay up there.
Well, yeah, that makes more sense, I suppose.
Because we don't have a lot of evidence that water is going to, you know, kill the walkers.
Well, that one time that Eugene sprayed the walkers with the hose was pretty great. Yeah, that was like a really concentrated, directed effort.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about some of these like newer buildings that are being built these days that are really big high rises will have like a big collection of water at the top to just like flood the building out in case of fire and emergencies. But
Yeah, and this Sue Ellen Mischke crew, I'm not really feeling like they are particularly menacing because they didn't even kill Hector. They just like grabbed him and then give us the keys and they gave him back. So I don't really know how much we should be afraid of them. They're sort of just like well-off people who threw a wedding at a fancy hotel. I don't know. I'm not really too scared of them.
They were pretty, you know, pretty relaxed when it came to, like, you know, this woman who had locked them away. The unimaginable horrors that these people must have seen. Watching the entire, like, guests in this entire wedding, like, all of them turning one after another until there's only about 12 of them left. They've seen some stuff. They've been through trauma. And then they finally get their chance to get their hands on Elena and exact vengeance. And they just kick her out of the hotel.
Yeah.
And they gave her Hector, too. Like, they, you know, they
all right, here's your friend back. Yes.
Now get out of here.
Yeah.
That was bad.
Well, it definitely speaks
Definitely
speaks to them not being the bad people in this scenario. And I think, you know, one thing I did notice, Elena was very, very quick to lock that door. I mean, it was just the one guy at that point. You know, I know you're trying to contain whatever, but man, he moved awfully fast on that.
Yeah. They're going to leave a pretty nasty one-star review on Yelp, I think, though, after this. They did not have a great experience.
Rightly so.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so next week, so we're going to get Maddie, and we're going to get more of the Strand storyline. Josh, is it back to Nick next week?
It looks like it's back to Nick.
Back to Nick. Okay.
How about that? We had a week off, though.
Yeah, it looks like it showed him screaming something in the middle of the town square and being a crazy person.
Yeah, looks like awesome. Nick's back to his old tricks in this one.
Yep, sounds about right.
I see dead people.
How do we reconcile the hotel storyline, the Chris and Travis storyline, and the Nick storyline here before the end of season two?
Yeah, I don't know, right? Especially because it seemed like Nick headed south, you know, Madison and those guys headed north. Travis and Chris, what did they, like, go east? So I don't know. I mean, how would these characters get back together? Maybe they won't. Maybe this will continue into season three. I don't know.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. All right. Well, we'll see. Josh, you have a hashtag for this week?
Do I have a hashtag for this week? I'm trying to think if there was a good one.
Keymaster?
Keymaster is pretty good.
All right. Well, we'll just go with the Keymaster just for the sake of brevity here on the Fear of the Walking Dead podcast. But again, very fun to check into this show. And I do find the podcast to be the more enjoyable part of my Fear of the Walking Dead experience.
Yes.
Yeah. Fun stuff. Hope you guys are having fun, too, as we try to make sense of what happened. Josh, of course, speaking of trying to figure out what happened, you and Antonio Mazzaro are really putting in an amazing effort covering Mr. Robot Season 2.
Yeah, we're putting in some work over on the Mr. Robot podcast. Only a few more weeks left on that one, season two, which has been unsatisfying for some viewers. I really don't get how that's possible. I've been loving season two so far, and I think that our podcast coverage has been pretty aces. So you can find that at posterrecaps.com/Mr. Robot iTunes, MR Robot iTunes.
People are still complaining on the Mr. Robot?
I think a little bit. I'm not hearing it as much. I think that this past week's episode especially, really hard to be mad at that hour of television.
Yeah, I definitely heard it in the start of the season, but I have I feel like whatever things that people might have been mad at, right, I think they've definitely have worked themselves out if people were annoyed with the Mr. Robot. All right, and of course, if you want to hear more about Sue Ellen Mischke, the Seinfeld podcast on post-show recaps as well, available for you to listen to anytime. Of course, Josh is on Twitter at Round Howard, as is Alex Kidwell at Alex Kidwell. Alex, anything else?
Oh, you know me. I'm just busy with the Big Brother coverage these days, and yeah, it's coming down to the wire. So
yeah. Yeah, speaking of people locked up under terrible circumstances, yes, yeah, Big Brother.
Isn't there a baby James on Big Brother? Do I have that right?
Close enough.
There is James. He's kind of a baby.
He's
at times.
Five foot nothing. So
yes,
you're not too far off there.
Yeah, I knew a Big Brother. I got it.
Yeah, so that's that was the case. Of course, we always look forward to hearing what you guys have to say in the comments on postshowrecaps.com. You can subscribe to the Fear the Walking Dead podcast, postshowrecaps.com/TWD iTunes. Have a good one, everybody. Take care. Bye.